his hand. I take it. My eyes flickering as always to the scars on his knuckles. It's getting late, he says gently. Chapter 24. We have dinner that night with Hideo's parents. I look on at how carefully Hideo fries meat, chops vegetables, and sets rice in the steamer. While he does, his mother fusses over my pale complexion as I help her chop vegetables. "This tiny child," she scolds gently, beaming up at me. "Hideo, why haven't you been feeding her? Make sure you give her a big bowl. It will add some pink to her cheeks." "Okasan," he says with a sigh. "Please." She shrugs. "I am telling you, she needs nutrition if her mind is to perform at its best. You remember what I told you about how neurons use the energy delivered by your blood?" I exchange a wry smile with Hideo as she launches into an explanation about blood. Hideo is the one who sets the table, who lays the food out for us, and who pours everyone tea. Dinner is so delicious that I wish it could last forever. Juicy, tender cuts of chicken fried to perfection, gleaming rice topped with a fried egg, lightly pickled vegetables for garnish, soft mochi cakes made of sticky rice flour for dessert, each stuffed with strawberry and sweet red bean, soothing cups of hot green tea. As we eat, Hideo's parents speak Japanese to each other in low voices, sneaking occasional smiles at me, as if they think their movements are too stealthy for me to notice. I nudge Hideo sitting beside me.
"What are they saying?"
I whisper. "Nothing," he replies, but to my surprise, I see a faint blush on his cheeks. "I don't usually have time to cook, that's all. So they're commenting on it." I grin. "But you cooked dinner for me?" The smile I get in return from the creator of Warcross is, of all things, bashful. "Well," he says, "I wanted to do something for you for a change." He looks expectantly at me. "Do you like it?" Suede gift boxes holding $15,000 electric skateboards, flights on private jets, closets full of expensive clothes, dinners at restaurants he owns. And yet, none of that has made my heart skip like this earnest, hopeful look on his face as he waits to hear if I enjoyed the food he made for me. I lean my shoulder into him as I hold my bowl.
"Decent,"
I reply. He blinks in surprise, then seems to remember what he'd once said to me during our first meeting. A laugh escapes him. "I'll take it," he says, leaning back. Still, even as he talks easily with both his mother and father, I can't help thinking about his words from earlier. That Sasuke is a topic never discussed with them. That their grief and shame run so deep that they can't even bear to have their second son's portrait in the house. No wonder I never heard about this in all the documentaries I watched about Hideo. No wonder he has such a strict company policy of not talking about his family. "They don't want to move," Hideo tells me on our ride back into Tokyo. "I've tried convincing them 1,000 times, but they don't want to leave our old home. So I do my best to keep them safe here."
"Safe?"
I ask. "There are bodyguards watching their home at all times." Of course there would be. I hadn't even noticed them. But now I think about the random passerby on the sidewalk, the gardener working on the hedge. By the time his car pulls up in the back of the Phoenix Rider's dorm, it's nearly midnight. I stare at the overlays on the tinted windows, currently showing an empty car interior so that no one will be able to see us both inside. I'll see you soon, I whisper to him, reluctant to leave. He draws closer, touches my chin with one hand, and guides me into a kiss. I close my eyes and lean into it. Finally, too soon, he pulls away. Good night, he murmurs. I have to force myself not to look back as I get out of the car and head toward the dorm. But even long after his car has pulled away and left me alone, his presence lingers. There was a new expression in his eyes tonight. The kind open only to a few. But there are still secrets behind it. I wonder what it will take to uncover another of them. The rest of the week flies by. On Friday morning, the familiar sound of Asher ramming his wheelchair into my door stirs me out of my restless sleep in my dorm room. Game three, he shouts, the excitement obvious in his voice as it fades down the hall. Let's go! We're gonna knock out the Cloud Knights in record time! I rub a hand across my face. I feel groggy today, my mind stifled and my heart still pounding from another round of nightmares, and my limbs are weighed down as I drag myself out of bed. While I dress, a message pops into my view from Hideo. Good luck today. I'll be watching from the balconies. I shake my head. Now he's just thumbing his nose at his attackers. I thought you were going to stay away from the upper decks. We've redone the security cams, rewired the stadium, and security detail has been doubled. They'd be fools to attack in the same place again. I'll be fine. I already know there's nothing I can do to talk him out of it. Well, be careful, okay? Keep your eyes peeled. My eyes will be on you, I'm afraid. A nagging worry lingers in my mind, but his words still pull a smile out of me. I head downstairs. The other Phoenix Riders chat animatedly on our way to the stadium this morning. I feel strangely disconnected from it all. Ren doesn't seem to act any differently toward me, but his nonchalance bothers me even more. Maybe I should have told Hideo about him after all. Maybe he would have been disqualified from today's game. I narrow my eyes as I watch Ren crack a joke with Asher. No. Hell if he's going to force me out of my element. I'm going to keep using him to get to the bottom of this. The stadium feels like a blur today, and as we enter the arena and go to our individual terminals, I feel like I'm walking in a fog. The announcer sounds far away, and the cheers from the audience turn into a mess of background noise. I keep my head turned up to the balcony seats. Sure enough, Hideo is there, surrounded by bodyguards. Then the world goes dark, and I find myself transported into another realm.
Welcome to the Lost City level.
The echo of the announcer's voice fades away as the virtual world materializes around us. Dim light filters down from the ocean's surface far above. I find myself floating above a spectacular ruined city, surrounded on all sides by walls of colorful coral. Stone pillars tower up toward the surface. Piles of rock are everywhere, looking like once grand theaters and bathhouses. Turquoise light shines from within some of their crevices, forming glowing lines that seem to point out pathways to take. The ruins stretch as far as I can see, dappled sunlight dancing against their surfaces, and drifting over them are a field of shining, jewel-like power-ups. The only thing keeping us from feeling completely immersed is the sound of the crowd's cheers all around us. I look to either side. My teammates are all here, dressed in outfits of bright white with flippers on our feet and fins on our arms. I look down at my hands. They are equipped with buttons in my palms. When I experiment with pressing them, my avatar jerks forward a bit. This will be how we get around. Far on the other side of the ruins appear our rivals, the Cloud Knights. They are dressed in outfits of bright yellow, standing out against the blue tint of this place. All of our eyes are turned toward them. All except Wren's. I glance at him to see him staring down at the ruins already, as if searching for something. My jaw tightens. Follow him.
Game! Set! Fight!
The game starts. Asher barks orders at us through our comms, and we split immediately. On the other side of the ruins, the Cloud Knights dive down for the ruins, no doubt ready to lose themselves inside the maze of crumbled structures. We dive too. I clench my fists down on the buttons on my palms, and I jerk forward through the water in a blur of motion, slicing a trail behind me. A bar appears in the center of my view, showing how much oxygen I have left. As we get to the point where we start splitting up, my teammates reappear as tiny dots on a small map in my view. But the only person I'm paying attention to is Wren. He swims away from the others and toward a series of collapsed columns that form a cave. Considering what had happened after our first round, I change course from where Asher tells me to go and instead trail after Wren.
Emmy!
Asher calls through our comms. He sighs. Can you follow my lead for once? I said go center, toward that collapsed amphitheater. I see a better route, I lie, continuing in my direction. Don't worry. Asher makes a sound as if to argue, but then he stops, as if he'd remembered my successful moves from our last game.
Your only solo move, he says. Hear me?
Yes, Captain. He flickers out. The light grows dim around us, with only faint rays of blue and silver dancing against the stone formations. I keep my gaze on Wren. He's moving at a good pace in front of me and has just rounded a corner. Where is he going?
And it looks like the Cloud Knights have secured the first rare power-up of the game.
The announcer's voice comes on all around us.
The silver and gold invisibility.
I should be concentrating on the game right now. But I find myself continuing on my hunt. My oxygen level starts to deplete. Warning, 25% left, flashes in my view. Up ahead, I see a spot between the rocks where bubbles of air are coming out in a steady stream. But if I stop now, I might never catch up to Wren. So I skip it, then propel myself onward. I'm so close. Then, suddenly, everything around me shifts. The underwater ruins vanish. I'm no longer floating in an ocean, but standing in a cavern encircling me, trapping me in. Dim scarlet light illuminates the space. The sounds of the audience's cheers abruptly go silent. I blink. What had happened? In real life, I reach up to adjust my earphones. Did they glitch? It's as if I'd suddenly been taken out of the game. I can't even see my teammates on a map anymore. Hello? I say, shifting around. My voice echoes. If my game is glitched, then I should take off my lenses right now and alert the authorities. The game would be paused as they fix it. But instead, I continue looking around, my heart beating faster now. No, this is not an accident. The red hue of this space looks too similar to the dark world. When I blink again, a tall figure is standing in front of me. He's clad in the fitted black armor I've become so used to seeing now, and his face is completely hidden behind a dark, opaque helmet. His head is turned directly toward me. For a moment, we just stare at each other in silence. Zero's proxy. Or his follower. Or maybe himself. I find my voice. You're who Hideo is after, I say, taking a step forward.
And you're the one who's been trailing me. Hideo's little lackey.
His voice sounds deep and distorted in this cavern.
This is really him. He knows who I am. He knows what I'm doing. Instantly, I think of the moment when I'd seen him appear in the last game.
Had he set that to test whether or not I could see him? And now he has sabotaged this game in order to speak directly to me.
My teammates will see that I'm trapped, I say to him.
My words come out forceful and frustrated as memories of Hideo's near assassination flash back at me.
You can't keep disrupting every world.
Zero walks closer to me, his muscles shifting underneath the black armor until we are separated by a mere foot. He stares down at me.
Here's what your teammates currently see.
A window pops up in the center of my view, and I see the underwater ruins. I see myself, ignoring Asher's repeated commands and idling in an area away from the others, collecting simple power-ups. I see myself getting trapped in an obvious airless pocket.
Right now, as far as they're concerned, you've managed to seal yourself in an underwater cave in the ruins, and you're running out of air fast.
Why are you here? I say. What do you want?
I'm here to give you a fair offer, he replies. His voice echoes around me.
A fair offer?
How else should I say it? A deal, a proposal, a suggestion. Take your pick.
My temper flares. I've been causing problems for you, haven't I? You were forced to speak to me directly? What's this? Are you angry that someone has finally managed to get close to bringing you in?
Do I sound angry?
My words make him laugh once. It's a low, quiet sound.
You're too good to be working for him. How much does Hideo pay you to keep you so loyally at his side? To come when he whistles? Or is something else drawing you to him?
Your charm overwhelms me, I say in my driest voice.
And what if I overwhelm his number?
I narrow my eyes. Are you honestly offering to hire me?
Everyone has a price. Name yours.
No. Zero shakes his head at me.
Choose carefully.
I am careful.
Are you?
He looks down at me so that I can see my own avatar's face reflected in his helmet.
Because, as far as I can tell, you've been living a risky life in New York City. Because you've been risky in choosing your relationships.
A shiver runs through me. Has he been researching my past? Has he been watching me? Does he know about Hideo and me? And you are messing with the wrong person, I say through gritted teeth.
I was giving you a compliment.
This is your idea of a compliment?
I'm not known for making offers, Amika. Interpret that however you'd like.
My hands clench into fists.
Well, you can take that generous offer, I say in a low voice as I move toward him, and shove it up your virtual ass.
He leans close to me.
Everyone always thinks they're so brave.
And when I look down, I notice with horror that the arm of my suit, originally bright white like my teammates, is turning black. Plates of dark armor clip into place around my wrist, then cover my forearms, then creep up to my shoulders. They line my chest and neck, my waist and legs. I choke out a gasp and step away from him as if this will stop it. But in this moment, I no longer look like an architect. I look like his hunter, dressed entirely in black.
Get away from me, I snarl, before I kill you. It is you, he replies, who came to me.
His words just make me angrier. I'm going to give you one more chance to turn yourself in. It'll make life easier for everyone.
He just watches me, his silent calm unnerving. Finally, he starts to turn away.
You're going to regret this,
he says. Then, before I can shout anything else at him, he vanishes. So does the Scarlet Cavern. Suddenly, I'm thrust back into the game. The roar of the audience abruptly returns, followed by the announcer's shocked voice and the jumble of my teammates' voices all ringing in my ears. I look frantically down, expecting to see myself still encased in black armor that resembles Zero's. But it's gone, as if it were all a hallucination. My white game suit is intact again.
Emmy? Ems! Asher shouts. What the hell are you doing?
Forget her! Comes Hammy's voice, frantic. She's out! I'm going for the artifact now!
I realize I am floating, frozen, trapped inside a set of ruins with only a small eye hole through which I can see the rest of the game unfolding. Asher is trying in vain to fend off three Cloud Knights. He's going to lose his artifact. I try to ram myself through my underwater cage, but I can't. And then I realize it's because I have no more oxygen left. My reserves are red. That's what Hammy had meant. I'm dead, struck out of the round until I can regenerate. What had happened?
I don't believe it, the announcer is shouting now. After their incredible first win, the Phoenix Riders may be disqualified early this year if they don't do something soon.
Hammy appears at the last second, flickering into view like a phantom in the water. She lunges for the Cloud Knight's artifact before they can register her presence, right at the same time as the Knights lunge for Asher's. Both teams seize the other's artifact at almost the exact same time. The crowd screams. A few seconds pass before the final score appears in our views.
The Phoenix Riders manage to hang on to victory by a millisecond,
the announcer shouts, as the world vanishes around me and the real world, the arena and the screaming crowds, comes back into view. I see Asher roll out of his station in a furious mood. His face is twisted in anger. He's glaring at me. So are my other teammates. I look up at the enormous holograms in the stadium that are replaying segments of the game, only to see myself ignoring the others and sabotaging their moves. Boos are mixed in with the cheers in the crowd. Some are shouting for a replay that we hadn't won this round at all.
What the hell happened? Asher demands as he approaches me. That was the most embarrassing, shameful display I've ever seen from a pro player. You tried to throw that game on purpose.
What can I say? Zero's figure is still hovering in my mind, ominous and silent. I'm sorry, I start to say.
Asher turns his head in disgust. We'll talk back at the dorms.
From the corner of my eye, I see Roshan shake his head at me in confusion, while Hammy looks away in disappointment. We had won, but it didn't look like it at all. My gaze goes to Ren, who is watching me. The edge of his lips tilts ever so slightly. My jaw tightens. He knows. Suddenly, the holograms in the arena change. The crowd goes still for a moment. I go still. My teammates all pause in unison. Then, everyone bursts into gasps and shouts. As they do, I can only find enough strength to stare in stunned silence at the grainy screenshot that is now publicly broadcast to everyone in the arena, and probably to everyone watching this game. Everyone in the world. I don't know who had taken it or how, but somehow I know Zero is involved. This is the beginning of his attack on me.
The holograms display a giant photo of me, stepping out of Hideo's home at night. Of him leaning in to kiss me. Of his hand still holding onto mine. It's unmistakable. The news is out.
Chapter 25. Phoenix Rider snags heartthrob billionaire. Hideo Tanaka plays his wild card. Wild card gets billionaire boyfriend. Exclusive, first leaked photos of Hideo and Amika. When we arrive at the dorms, I go straight to my room without saying a word to anyone. I'm too afraid to look at my phone. I've already turned off my messages. Even so, it was impossible not to catch a glimpse of the headlines screaming by on marquees near the Tokyo Dome, broadcasting the news to the public. Now I curl up on my bed, my heart pounding from the onslaught. From how grainy the shot looked, it must have been taken with some insanely high-powered camera lens from some remote hill. After a few moments, I hesitantly turn on my messages and enable ones from Hideo. A message from him pops up immediately. Stay inside. I'm sending extra security to the team quarters. I'm about to respond when a knock sounds at my door. Hammy's voice drifts through to me.
Are you staying in there forever?
She demands.
Or are you going to offer us any kind of explanation?
I hang back for a while on my bed, my head down, gathering my strength. Then I sigh and stand up. I'm coming, I reply as I walk to the door. When I open it, I find myself staring into Hammy's narrowed eyes. She brings up a tabloid cover to hover between us. This one has published the grainy photo of Hideo and me, along with the cover title, Love or Cheating?
Downstairs, she says, waving her fingers once and erasing the cover from view.
She turns away toward the stairs before I can respond. I hesitate, then follow her. Down in the atrium, Roshan is activating blackout shields on the floor-to-ceiling windows in an attempt to keep journalists out. But I can still hear the photographers clicking madly away, the flashes of their cameras reflecting off the glass. Before the windows go completely dark, I catch a glimpse of the main courtyard leading out to the security gate. A mob of paparazzi have crowded there, some of them pushing past the security. Two guards chase down a reporter and cameraman sprinting toward our dorms. It's a feeding frenzy. Roshan temporarily looks away from the outside crowds to focus on me. His usually gentle expression has been replaced with one of suspicion. Asher regards me with a scowl. I sit down on the couches with Hammy, trying to avoid Ren's stare. But even then, I can feel his smugness directed at me.
When were you going to tell us? Roshan finally begins.
I shake my head. It's complicated.
Is it?
Hammy replies, glancing in disdain at the darkened windows.
All those times you didn't want to hang out with the rest of us at night? Was it because you were off seeing Hideo Tanaka? We're supposed to be a team, Emmy, but obviously you didn't think we could handle your fancy relationship.
I scowl at her. What's going on between Hideo and me has nothing to do with how I feel about you and the team. Asher shoots me a hard look. It has everything to do with us. We just got into the final championship round, but now people think we won unfairly. They think Hideo's favoritism for you made the judges hand the win over to the Phoenix Riders.
No, it was clear that we won,
Roshan interjects. He's watching me, telling me silently to defend myself. And it must be hard to talk about such a high-profile relationship, right?
We're listening, Em, but you have to give us something.
If only you knew the half of it.
How was I supposed to bring everything up? This was something in my personal life. I didn't think I had to bring it into our team practices.
Except you did, Hammy says.
You were always ready to skip out on time with us or leave early from training. And what was that pitiful display today?
Asher nods at Hammy's words as he continues looking at me.
You ignored everything I said. You told me you knew better. I gave you the benefit of the doubt because I had faith in you. Because you've proven yourself before, but...
He pauses in frustration.
I am your captain. I chose you as the first round draft pick. I've worked hard to build a team of this caliber. Even if we go on to win the championships this year, who's going to believe that we earned it? I can already see the headlines. Phoenix Riders cheat their way to the top.
Oh, come on, I reply, my voice rising now in frustration. It's just a game.
It's just a game?
Hammy interrupts. Everyone around me tenses, and I know I've said the wrong thing. It is precisely the thing I have always hated hearing from others. I start to correct myself, but she leans forward and glares at me.
Then why are you even here? Why are you even competing in Warcross if it's so beneath you? Weren't you living in New York's gutters before you came here? You know I didn't mean it like that. Then you should get out of the habit of saying things you don't mean. I'm damn good at Warcross. Being good at Warcross allowed me to buy my ma her own house, send my sis to a good university.
She pauses to stretch her hands out at the dorm.
That's why everyone loves Warcross, isn't it? Why we're all obsessed with a Neuralink. Why you use it. Because it makes things possible. It's not what I meant, I repeat. There's too much that you don't understand. When there's a lot more at stake than a championship, then yes, it is just a game.
I hadn't planned my outburst correctly, and I regret some of it right away. Hammy looks incredulous, then skeptical. Nearby, Ren regards me curiously. He's daring me to say more.
Wait, Roshan says, making a twirling motion with one finger.
So this isn't just a fling. What do you mean when there's a lot more at stake?
I take a deep breath. Everything is on the tip of my tongue now, ready to tumble out. But I stop just short of saying too much. Ren is still here, sitting with us. Zero has threatened me. It's not worth putting the others at risk. I mutter a curse under my breath and stand up.
I'm sorry.
Hammy leans her elbows on her knees.
There's more you're keeping from us, and I can't understand why.
What aren't you telling us, Em?
Asher asks, his voice very quiet now.
I have my reasons.
Something sympathetic flickers in Roshan's gaze. The edge of Ren's lip quirks up again, so subtle that no one else notices, and his eyes harden at me. I stare levelly back, refusing to give him the satisfaction of intimidating me. Then I turn around and head back to my room. Asher calls my name, but I don't respond.
Careful, Amika.
The voice echoes in my ears. I freeze in my steps. There, through my virtual view, is Zero, standing at the end of the hallway leading up to the second floor, his silhouette encased in dark armor and his opaque helmet turned toward me. My mouth turns dry at the sight of him.
I warned you,
he says.
What are you doing here?
I say in a hoarse croak. Behind me, I hear Hammy's voice as she walks toward me.
Emmy, she says. Who are you talking to?
He just stares calmly at me. Check your memories.
My memory worlds. Suddenly, my heart seizes. I type a quick command and bring up a window to search for my memory worlds. All the carefully compartmentalized pieces of my father that I spend so much time revisiting. No, please.
When they come up, I freeze.
The files are blank. The option, new memory world, hovers over them. I tremble.
Impossible.
I put up all sorts of security shells on them, buried them deep in my accounts so that nothing could ever happen to them. Secured them in the cloud, cloned them multiple times out of an abundance of caution. I search frantically for my cloned versions now, but they are gone too. Dad, humming cheerfully at our dining table as he cuts fabrics. Dad, crafting handmade Christmas ornaments with me. Dad, showing me how he mixes paints. Dad, sharing roasted peanuts with me in Central Park, wandering the halls of museums, celebrating my birthday. Zero has deleted them all. I'm stunned, reeling from the wound.
Stay out of my way, and I might return them to you. Continue, and this will only be the beginning.
My fingers curl tightly into fists at my side. My anger sharpens like a blade toward the armored silhouette before me. It takes me a second to realize that tears are blurring my vision. Behind me, Hammy finally approaches. Emmy, what's going on with you? She says.
Zero's head tilts ever so slightly, like he's mocking me. Too late.
And just then, an explosion rips through our dorm.
Chapter 26. A faulty gas line. That's the public explanation given for the blast. I don't get a better sense of what happened until I see it broadcast on the small TV in my hospital room. From the outside, it looks horrendous. One moment, the Phoenix Writers' dorm still standing. The next, a deafening explosion and an orange ball of fire erupting from the roof of our atrium. Windows shatter, spraying glass everywhere. As the fire billows out of control, pouring black smoke into the air, nearby dorms' lights turn on, and the players from the other teams come running over. Some are screaming. Others stand with their hands on their heads, at a loss for words. But most come rushing to our windows, shouting our names. Even Tremaine, bullying obnoxious Tremaine, is there, helping Roshan pull Asher out through a window. Then the fire trucks come, along with the ambulances. Flashing lights fill up the TV screen. There's a news announcer talking in front of our dorm, then interviewing Hammy, who looks awake and dazed as she clutches a blanket around herself. Asher suffered some cuts and bruises from broken glass, as did Roshan. But miraculously, all of us came out of it alive. It doesn't mean we're not all shaken up, though.
Miss Chen,
a nurse says, as she peeks in through my door, bobbing her head once.
You have a visitor.
I sit up with my arms wrapped around my legs, then nod quietly at her. My limbs feel numb.
Okay,
I reply. She leaves, and a moment later, returns with two others. It's Roshan, clutching a box, followed by Hammy. They look like they haven't slept in days. I open my mouth to greet them, but Hammy just shakes her head and reaches out to pull me into a hug. I wince. My arm still burns from the scratches I'd gotten, while my back aches from when the blast had tossed me off my feet. Ow, I groan. But the hug feels nicer than the pain, and I lean into her.
Ash senses love, she says against my shoulder. His brother and parents are with him in his hospital room.
I'm sorry, I whisper to her, tears welling in my eyes. The blast has thrown me all off.
I'm so sorry, Ham. You don't remember anything, do you?
She says, pulling away a bit to look at me.
You have carried me to the back door before you collapsed. Stop apologizing.
The explosion, the fire, the smoke. The faintest recollection of me shouting Hammy's name as we lean against each other. I shake my head repeatedly.
Roshan holds out the box with a grim face.
We salvaged what we could, he says.
When I open the box, I see broken shards of my Christmas ornament, along with burned scraps of what must be my father's painting. I run one hand across the remains. The lump in my throat grows until I can't swallow it anymore. I wipe my eyes with one hand.
Thank you,
I reply, as I place the box carefully beside me. Roshan leans close.
Based on what little we know, Ren's being questioned by the police right now. I don't buy the gas leak story.
But you know more about this than we do, don't you, Emmy?
Emmy adds, searching my gaze.
You have to tell us what's going on. We deserve to know.
Your lives were threatened, too. But still, I hesitate. If I tell them everything, it might only endanger them more. They might fall on Zero's radar. They never asked to be involved in any of this, never entered the championships to hunt down a criminal. We're never getting paid to put themselves at risk. Hammy studies me like I'm a chessboard.
You remind me of myself from several years ago, she says. I always offered help, but I refused to accept any. My mother scolded me about that. Do you know what she told me?
When you refuse to ask for help, it tells others that they also shouldn't ask for help from you. That you look down on them for needing your help. That you like feeling superior to them. It's an insult, Emmy, to your friends and peers. So don't be like that. Let us in. Hammy's words strike me clean in the chest. Even though I've lied with the best before, I know that both of them can see the truth on my face. That I'm involved in something beyond my capabilities. Something that could have killed them. I'm used to working alone. Even if I told them everything, what good would that really do? Am I really going to drag them into this hunt with me? But this is no ordinary hunt. And Hideo is no ordinary client. If our lives are all in danger, then we have bigger problems to deal with than whether or not I put my faith in my teammates. The mention of my name on the TV makes us turn toward the screen in unison. The news anchor is talking beside a photo of me, taken when I was celebrating our first win with the other writers.
That this morning, Hideo Tanaka announced that he is officially pulling two players from the Phoenix Riders, currently one of the top-ranked Warcross teams. Their fighter, Renoir Tomas, and architect Amika Chen. No word yet on the reasons behind either decision, although speculation...
Pulled from the team. All the air rushes out of my lungs. Roshan and Hammy whirl to face me.
Pulled? Hammy whispers sharply. Roshan is quieter, searching my gaze. He seems ready to say something, then decides against it. I only hesitate one more time. Then I pull Roshan and Hammy in for another hug.
Tonight, I whisper in their ears. I promise. I can't talk about it out loud right now.
Then I break away and say,
the fact that you've brought me this box is help enough.
Roshan frowns, but Hammy gives me an imperceptible nod. She tries to smile.
Will do,
she replies. It sounds like the right answer to what I said, but I know it also means she understood what I meant.
Miss Chen,
the nurse says as she steps back in.
You have another visitor.
Roshan and Hammy exchange another pointed look with me. Then they get up and head out of the room. A moment later, the nurse opens the door wider to usher in my new visitor. Hideo comes striding in, his face a mask of anger and worry. His eyes lock on mine, and some of his expression dissolves into relief.
You're awake, he says,
as he sits down on the side of my bed.
You can't,
I reply, pointing at the TV. My mind is still spinning.
Pulled? Really? Why didn't you tell me?
Would you have me keep you both in and risk everyone's lives? Hideo replies. We didn't know how long it would take for you to wake up. I had to make a decision. His eyes are dark with fury, although it seems to be directed inward. His expression reminds me of how he looked as he spoke about his brother.
What about not caving to intimidation?
That was before Zero threatened you and other players.
How will taking me out of the tournament stop whatever Zero's planning to do during the final game?
It won't. Hideo's jaw tightens. But I'd rather not see you involved in it. The whole reason for entering you in the games was for you to have better access to information. But I think you may have collected everything you possibly can from being an official team member. He sighs. It's my fault. I should have taken you off the team a long time ago. The thought of abandoning my team and sabotaging their chances at a win. I close my eyes and lower my head.
Breathe. I heard Renz talking to the police.
He's in custody, yes, and being interrogated. I start shaking my head.
You're not going to get anything out of him that way. His arrest will only alert Zero that you're onto him, and he'll move his operations further underground. Hideo, come on. The next time I go to a game sponsored in the Dark World, I'll have no...
You won't be.
Hideo interrupts. His eyes search mine, dark and resolute.
I'm letting you off the job.
I blink. You're firing me?
I'm still paying you the bounty. He replies. Why does he sound so distant?
His tension makes him cold, even hostile.
My head is spinning.
But every locked door has a key. I haven't found the key yet. I can't leave now.
It's not about the bounty, I say. You've earned it. The money is sitting in your account now.
The 10 million. I start shaking my head in disgust. You have to stop doing that. Why do you always think you can just throw money at people and get them to do what you want?
Because it was the whole reason why you came here in the first place. Hideo says, his tone clipped. I'm giving you what you wanted.
What the hell do you know about what I wanted? My voice rises. I can feel the burn of my cheeks. Flashes of my father appear in my thoughts. Then, myself, curled in a ball on my foster home bed, struggling to find a reason to live. All of my memory worlds are now gone, deleted, taken by Zero. I can't look back on my memories of my father if I wanted to.
You think I'm just here for the money? You think you can fix everything by writing a check?
Hideo's eyes seem to shudder. Then we understand each other less than I thought. Or maybe you're not understanding me. I narrow my eyes at him. I saw Zero standing in our dorms before the bomb went off.
Listen, he didn't show up there to threaten me just on a whim, or just because he now knows who I am. We tracked down Ren and have proof that he's connected to Zero's mission. You even have him in custody now. That means Zero feels threatened. He thinks we're closing in, and that's why he's lashing out. Planting a bomb means that he's risking alerting the authorities in an attempt to keep me off his trail. We've backed him into a corner. All of the momentum is on our side.
And that means he's at his most unpredictable. Hideo finishes. This is someone we still know nothing about, and I'm not going to see another bomb go off just because I want you to catch him for us.
Just because you take me off the job doesn't mean he won't attack again.
I know. That's why I've canceled every dome event.
Every dome event? Around the world?
I will not have people physically gathering by the thousands in stadiums across the world. Not if it poses a risk for them. They can enjoy the rest of the tournaments from the comfort of their homes. No, I can't give up now. My old familiar panic is rising up again. The terror of seeing the wall go up between the problem and the solution. Of standing helplessly by, while danger circles someone I love. There's something missing here. As if a new development had suddenly changed Hideo's mind about everything. You always knew this job involved some risks. Why are you pulling me out now? You're too afraid of seeing me hurt.
I'm too afraid of involving you in something far bigger than yourself, that you didn't even choose.
This is what I do, I insist. And I know what I'm doing.
I'm not questioning your talent, Hideo responds, sounding annoyed now. He looks like he wants to say something more, but stops short and just shakes his head. Right now, all I want to do is minimize any risks, to make sure no one will be harmed.
He looks at me.
You've already done your job, Amika. You gave us enough information to know when his operations will happen, and you tracked down someone involved with his plans. It's enough for us to keep the audience safe. I've dismissed the other hunters, too. Let the police take it from here.
But you still haven't caught Zero. That's not called finishing my job. So if you have a better explanation than that, I'd like to hear it.
I've already given it to you.
No, you haven't.
You want a better explanation?
Yes, I reply, my voice rising. I think I deserve one.
Anger flashes hot in Hideo's eyes now. I'm telling you to leave, Amika.
I don't take orders from an ex-boss, I snap.
Hideo narrows his eyes. Suddenly, he leans forward, puts his hand on the back of my neck, and pulls me forward. He kisses me hard. My slew of words comes to a screeching stop. A knife cuts through my rising anger. He pulls away, his breath short. I'm too startled to do anything except gasp for air. He leans his forehead against mine, then closes his eyes.
Leave. His voice is raspy, desperate, angry. Please.
What aren't you telling me?
I murmur. I cannot, in good conscience, keep you on this job.
His voice turns quieter. If you don't believe any of my other reasons, at least believe this one.
Before all this, I used to sit on my bed and flip through article after article about Hideo, wondering what it might be like to meet him someday, to become as successful as him, to work with him and talk with him and be like him. But now, Hideo is before me, exposing some fragile inner working of his heart. And I'm sitting here and staring back, flustered and confused. Something is missing. Something he's not telling me.
Had Zero threatened him in some way, too? Had he threatened me in front of Hideo? And prompted Hideo to pull me out of everything?
I shake my head and hug my knees tighter. My mind spins.
He studies me for a moment. You and your teammates will be moved somewhere safe. I'll see you after the tournaments are over. Then he stands up and leaves my bedside.
Chapter 27. That night I sleep poorly. The hospital bed doesn't fold quite right, and no matter what I do, I can't get comfortable on it. When I finally do drift off, old memories seep into my dreams. Scenes from when I was 8 years old, when my life was back in New York City. I came home from school one day with my yearbook clutched in my arms. "Dad, it's here," I shouted as I shut the door behind me. The school had let my third-grade class decorate the book's front cover that year, and I'd spent the entire past week painstakingly drawing in the elaborate swirls on the cover's corners. It took me a second to realize that our home was in complete disarray. Strips of watercolor paper everywhere. Cut-up clothes in small piles on the floor. Paintbrushes and buckets strewn across the dining room table. In one corner of the room was a haphazard dress Dad was working on, pinned to a bust in a dozen places. I threw down my backpack at the front door and looked on as Dad bustled past me, holding a few pins between his lips. "Dad?" I said. When he didn't answer, I raised my voice. "Dad!" "You're late." He flashed me a quick scowl as he settled back into his rhythm of work. "Help me get the snow peas out of the freezer to defrost."
"Sorry. I was finishing up my homework in the library. But look!"
I held up the yearbook with a grin.
"They're here!"
I'd thought for sure that his eyes would jump immediately to the swirls on the cover, that he'd break into his familiar smile and hurry over to have a closer look. "Oh, Emmy," he'd say, "look at your line work." Instead, he ignored me as he started pinning up another section of the dress. He was humming to himself, some melody I knew but couldn't quite place, and his hands trembled slightly as he worked. Was I in trouble? I ran through a list of possible things I could have done wrong, but came up empty.
"What are you making for dinner?" I asked,
trying to coax him into a conversation as I placed the yearbook down on the kitchen counter. He didn't respond. I gathered up his paintbrushes scattered on the dining table and dropped them back into the brush jar with a clatter, then wiped the table clean with a damp cloth. His laptop was open on the table, and I caught a glimpse of a site with numbers in bold red, along with images of dice and cards, and a symbol I didn't yet know was a gang sign. It read, -$3,290.
"Dad?"
I asked.
"What's this?"
"It's nothing," he replied without turning around. I didn't understand yet that it was a gambling site belonging to a criminal ring, but I did know what a minus sign in front of red numbers meant. I sighed loudly.
"Dad, you said you're not supposed to be spending money like that."
"I know what I said."
"You said you'd stop."
"Amika." I didn't catch the warning in his voice.
"You promised,"
I insisted, louder now.
"Now you're not going to have money again. You said..."
"Stop talking." His voice cracked like a whip. I froze, my words withering on my tongue, my face turned up in shock at my father's expression. His eyes had finally found mine, and the light in them shone feverish with fury, red from crying. In a flash, I knew what had happened. There was only one thing that could turn my father from a gentle, light-hearted man into someone angry and cruel. He'd heard from my mother. Already, the furious light had started to ebb from his face.
"I didn't mean that," he said, shaking his head as if confused. "Emmy..."
But my own anger had risen now. Before Dad could say anything else, I took a step away and tightened my lips.
"She messaged you, didn't she? What'd she say to you this time? That she misses you?"
"Amika..." He reached for my arm, but I'd already twisted away and was hurrying toward my room. A high-pitched ringing echoed in my ears. The last thing I saw before I slammed my door was the sight of my father standing there before his half-creation, alone. Shoulders sloped, his figure turned in my direction. Then I crawled onto my bed and began to cry. Hours passed. Later that night, my door creaked open an inch, and I saw my father peek in, holding a plate piled high with pizza.
"May I?"
he said quietly. I glared at him from under my blankets as he came in and shut the door behind him. Dark circles rimmed his eyes.
For the first time, I realized how exhausted he looked, that he must not have slept well for days. He sat down on the edge of my bed and held the plate out at me. I wanted to be stubborn, to stay mad, but my stomach growled at the smell of tomato and melted cheese, and I dragged myself into a sitting position.